Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today is a playwright, author, and disability rights activist whose work has been to change how all of us view the disabled as people, pure and simple. For Susan Nussbaum, a February day in 1978 held a life-changing event, but not a life-consuming event. That day she was struck by a car as she walked down a Chicago sidewalk on her way to acting class. 7 months later, she was released from rehabilitation, and she was, as she says, a wheelchair user. As the community's limitations and ignorance in serving the disabled became apparent, she then became an activist and began writing plays. Those include the one-woman play, Meshuganissimo, and No One Is Nasty, which have been performed by theater companies throughout the country. But through the last decade, she wrote less and worked to create a group for disabled teenage girls, the Empowered Feyfeys, which was cited by the Utney Reader. But Nussbaum has returned to writing with a powerful first novel that exposes the horrors of institutionalization and the resiliency and courage of the young people who live there. Good Kings, Bad Kings was the winner of the Penn Bellwether Prize for Socially Engaged Fiction this past year and tells its story through six narrators, from the kids in the facilities to the administrator who recruits kids to be institutionalized to a worker who has the kids' best interests at heart. The novel is at once poignant, funny, and affirming. The name of it again is Good Kings, Bad Kings, and Susan Nussbaum is our guest today. Susan Nussbaum, welcome to the studio. Tulsa, thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
This novel tells a story of institutionalization of young people with disabilities. You tell it from the standpoint of a variety of characters. And this story of institutionalization, it just is so, you know, I think you've written and said in various interviews that being disabled can be very isolating. A lot of times dealing with the problems of getting around leads to isolation, and just the idea of being institutionalized in a similar population, it's a very powerful novel, first of all, let me say that. And I guess it seems like you wanted to explore those themes, among others.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not sure when I said that thing about disability being isolating, because I don't feel like disability, like being a disabled person, which I am, has isolated me. I think when that occurs, it's more a feature of coming up against some form of discrimination on that sort of doesn't have much to do with me, but has to do with disabled people just being oppressed and or kept isolated. And in this book, for example, it's sort of the height of segregation of disabled people from the rest of the world.
And I think for a lot of people, this is eye-opening because we think of the deinstitutionalizing movement, and yet these facilities still are around.
Oh, yeah. The vast majority are. And I think in part that's because people aren't aware that there are alternatives, or that if we really wanted there to be alternatives, there would be some really good alternatives. But the book itself takes place in the present day, and I guess what, you know, it's one of these places that's not good. It's not by any means the worst of all of the institutions that people sort of hear about or read about, but it's definitely not a good place. And there are teenagers there, and they sort of find themselves there because things have fallen apart in other aspects of their lives in all sorts of different ways. And, you know, there's a lot of humor in the book. I know I'm just sort of putting that out there, but I think it's important for people to know that disabled people, and that was my whole agenda, was getting real voices of real people out there, is that disabled people are not anything like, I think, what we're led to believe by the dominant culture.
Right. I think you had an excellent essay in Huffington Post recently talking about disabled characters in fiction and movies. And you said the whole reason for those characters is the disability. It's never about the person who is disabled. It's about the disability itself.
I know. It's as if disabled people just spend 24/7 fretting about being disabled when the opposite is the case. What we're doing is living our lives just in the exact same way as everyone else. And this book, in spite of the fact that people are dealing with all kinds of abuse or at least just segregation, it's in spite of all of that, these are people that are concerned with all sorts of other things, you know? They are dealing with each other and their experiences in the same ways that most teenagers do. And there's some adult characters in the book as well that are, you know, extremely active in all sorts of other ways, besides just being disabled and worrying about getting cured or being, you know, heroic or whatever ways they write disabled characters these days.
Well, and I was struck by the fact that you basically, it boils down to about two plot lines, the stereotypical plot line involving a disabled character. They're either ruining their disability and want to end it all, or the people around them come to some realization. And I was struck by something you wrote. It said, you know, this is like in the days when white writers were writing about African Americans, in the day before African Americans were writing about themselves in television and movies. The same about gay and lesbian characters. It says we have to do the same thing in disabled situations because it is such a trite device that seems to work a lot from the commercial standpoint, and yet it disowns the people as themselves. And this is the beautiful thing about this book, is these people are so fully drawn, and some of them are unpleasant at times, some of them are heroic at times, and they're just, as you mentioned earlier, they're just people.
They're multifaceted.
Multifaceted.
Like we all are.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Good King, Bad Kings follows the stories of, I assume this is a fictional location, the Illinois Learning and Life Skills Center, which sounds so depressing to begin with. In fact,
yeah, they all have these weird names, you know, Sunny Acres and things. I think the titles of these places try and make them sound a whole lot more kind of dreamlike than they really are.
You begin the story with Yesenia Lopez, who's been removed from her high school, which itself was segregating those with physical and mental disabilities, because somebody got in her face and she beat on her with their footrest. Basically beat up the kid that was bugging her. And so she gets sent to juvie, and this is how we start the story with Yesenia Lopez. Tell us a little about this character.
She's Puerto Rican. She's about 15. She is trying to grow up, and her aunt, who raised her after an illness, at last died, and so Yesenia's really in crisis. She's living in a home for teenage girls who are, at least for the time, wards of the state until they reach 18. And she's bereft, you know. She's lost her aunt, the only person that she really had an unconditional supportive relationship with. And so she's angry. And she's also very funny and a bit adventurous and not likely to take any crap from anyone.
Yeah, and she is just this wonderful character that calls it the way she sees it. And another character that shows up, I kind of wonder if there's maybe some sort of semi-autobiographical strain in it. It's Joanne Madsen, who works in the center. She's a typist. She has one of these incredible statements in the book you write, that she says, there are poor people and poor disabled people. One of those things sucks. Both of those things together suck stratospherically. That's a very nice quote.
Well, thanks. There is certainly some of my experience of the details of disability stuff. She lives alone, as I do, and she's in a relationship. And that's another thing I think it's important to point out. For the majority of times people are likely to see disabled characters on TV or in the movies, they have seemingly no sexual side to their characters or have no sex lives at all or no relationships. And this character is quite different than that. And she's sort of musing to herself about how hard it is for most people with disabilities who are poor because of, really, I guess, the way disabled people have always been deprived of opportunities to participate fully in life. It's like adding insult to injury when you are disabled and poor. It's just very tough.
She's also somewhat of an advocate for the kids there, but the bigger advocate is a driver that you profile in the, one of the voices in the book, and that's Ricky Hernandez, who really does care for the kids.
Yeah, some aides, and I'm pretty sure this is a generalization that is sometimes very true. Some of the aides who work in this institution are pretty incredibly wonderful. They're emotionally solid people, but some of them are very marginal in that way. You know, they are not able to make emotional connections with the kids, and nor would they try. And it's that kind of scary detachment that is one of the things that makes these places so dangerous. And also because so many of them have been taken over by the private sector in the past number of years, that it's so much about profit. The whole business of institutionalization and nursing homes, etc. And when it's about profit, it's about bottom line and cutting services of all kinds, including cutting staff, and that's not good.
And that leads us to one of the other characters that provides a voice, and that's Michelle Volkman, who's basically a recruiter. She goes around hitting up homeless shelters, looking for people with disabilities that she can basically lure into this facility.
I mean, isn't that weird? Because I had no idea that such jobs even existed until I started researching. But yeah, there are people who go around recruiting other people for nursing homes or other kinds of institutions.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, this is a character who does go through some changes around what she does, which she, you know, something she believes is for the good of people that she helps to institutionalize.
It's funny. There we meet a character that we never hear her voice, but we hear her reflected through several other characters, and that's the character of Cherie. And Cherie basically has been kicked out of the house. And she tells Michelle she has schizophrenia. So, you know, she lures her into this facility through that. But I don't think we're so sure that schizophrenia is the problem there.
Well, in the same sense that any disability needs to be addressed, obviously. But to the extent that there are systems in place that make dealing with the disability so complicated and other, you know, parts of one's life so complicated, interactions and support for parents in the community. It's so very much less than it needs to be in order for parents to really get respite and stay nourished and whole emotionally in order to really take care of a kid with a disability when they're growing up. I see what you're saying, that the character does have a mental illness, but she would really be able to be pretty much okay if there were some things in place around her that made that more doable.
The name of the book is Good Kings, Bad Kings, a novel which won the Penn Bellwether Prize for socially engaged fiction. And my guest today is Susan Nussbaum, a playwright and disability rights activist. This is her first novel, though she's written many plays, and she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. And in the course of this book, these voices, sort of most of them, come together and try to make a difference at this facility. And, of course, this facility has some bad stories, some people who should not be working there, people who are just uninvolved in the lives of these people. And I think that sort of reflects the society at large, really.
Yeah, I agree.
I want to ask you a little bit about your playwriting. I know you wrote a lot of plays, say, in the 80s and 90s. And had you quit writing plays, or what had happened there?
I did quit writing plays. I became frustrated because it's difficult to get them produced. And, it was ironic that I actually ended up writing a novel because they're impossible to get published. But I just was turned off of writing plays. And I, at last, after not writing for some time, I sat myself in front of my computer and just started. And I lucked into this whole thing with Barbara Kingsolver, this prize that she has started and funds for writers who are interested in social justice issues. And every couple of years, people send in manuscripts from all over the place, and one is picked, and completely shockingly, I happened to be picked in 2012, and so many things fell into place for me after that. It was incredible. And so I got lucky.
Are you getting a second look at some of your plays at this point from this prize, or is it just opening new doors?
It's opening a lot of new doors, even for this novel to have a life after the print version of it. But I don't even, at this point, I'm not even that interested. I just want people to read the book. I think they'll enjoy it, you know? I know it's hard to imagine enjoying a book about a bunch of institutionalized people with disabilities. It's an unlikely topic, but it is a good read, at least I think so. And there's a lot of funny stuff to break up the bleakness. So.
Well, and I was struck by a couple of the characters. One was Teddy Dobbs. He seemed fun to write.
They were all fun at times and not so fun at times. It just, I guess it depends on the day you're writing. But, yeah, he's a kid with an intellectual disability and quite an extraordinary guy.
Yeah, he shows up each day in a suit and tie, and he is just so in love.
A romantic, but yeah, a crumpled up suit and tie every single day. I met a kid like that in my work. I used to work at a disability rights organization for many years, and I worked mostly with teenagers.
Now, that was Access Living, and
Yes, and
you wrote a piece in, I think it was Psychology Today, about how that really helped change you, because you were hit by a car in your early 20s. And we were talking about the isolation. I think I was reading about how isolating, services were in that point where,
right.
There was no help for people who are disabled. Everything from curbs, and I think you were in a little guerrilla group at one point that were busting up curbs so you could get around. And
not my group, but yeah,
right.
It was great.
And you found this place, Access Living, and it really did seem like it really changed your life.
Very true. I mean, I think it's so important for people to understand that if you become disabled later in life, it feels so enormous and catastrophic. And there is definitely a major learning curve involved, but the initial gloom and doom, the smoke can really clear once you understand that disability is largely an invention, or the difficult parts of disability. It's easy to go the self-shaming part route, that is, sort of taking your cue from what we know and the misconceptions we learn about disability before we become disabled. But it's liberating to suddenly meet up with a bunch of disabled activists and understand that your disability is just a part of who you are, and that part can be extraordinary in a way. It gives you access to a world you didn't understand before at all. there's sort of a subversive humor amongst disabled people that I really love. I really depend on it.
Well, you know, I think there's a character in the book, I believe it's Joanne, who refers to herself and others as Crips. And and it's almost like she's empowering that world, that word that has been so, it's been a denigrating word, and she's sort of empowered that by claiming it. And I think that's one of the things you've written about in other publications, too.
Yeah, I think the first generation of real disabled activists, who the people who were able to break through the isolation because of various lucky privileges that they were able to utilize, and unite with each other and start a movement against disability oppression, that those people were rejecting some of the language that had preceded us in terms of how one refers to disabled people. And in order to kind of take the sting out of the word crippled, we appropriated it and started referring to each other, at least just with our, with each other. I mean, it's not the kind of thing you hear too often in public, but with each other, we lovingly kind of refer to each other as Crips.
Yeah. I think I read something you said. You're still looking for the right word to describe. And you're saying you hope maybe the next generation will come up with a cool word.
Yes, we leave that to the next act, the young activists coming up, you know.
My guest today is Susan Nussbaum, a playwright, disability rights activist, whose first novel has received wonderful reviews, Good Kings, Bad Kings, a novel set in an Illinois institution for people with disabilities, and it won the Penn Bellwether Prize for socially engaged fiction. She's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. So the title, Good Kings, Bad Kings, there's a story that goes with this. And there's a story in the book, but there's actually a story from real life that this title came from. Is that right?
Yes, there is. And I was looking desperately for a title, and I just couldn't come up with one. And I'm usually very good with titles, but not this time. So I was reading the paper one day, and there was a series of articles about institutionalization of kids. And with disabilities, that is. There was a kid, story about a kid who was 12 or 13, and he was autistic, I think. And he lived at a place, a large institution, one of those places set back from the street, where kind of out of sight, out of mind. And one day he was in the institution's van with two aides. And he was sitting in the back seat. He was jumping in and out of the seat, and one of the aides was driving, and the other aide, who wasn't, went back to the kid and did what they call it's a certain kind of hold called a takedown, where they put a child face down on the floor and sort of straddle him or her across his back, sitting on the back, and hold your hands down. And the aide later testified, the aide who was driving the van, saw in the rear view that the child was struggling naturally. And so the aide that was holding him down said to the kid, "I can be a good king, or I can be a bad king." And horribly, the aide sat on the kid so long and with so much of his weight that the child ultimately suffocated and died. These are holds that have been outlawed in many states because of the dangerous nature of them, and but they still happen. And it struck me because it's so much about power. Being able to manipulate children with you know, kind of the kind of power that one can't fight against.
And in the course of the book, there is an aide that is referred to who uses that line in forcing, I think it's a student had very severe ADHD into what they call a timeout room, which I think is a horrible place. It smells like pee. It's just not a good place to be. And he says, I can be a good king or a bad king. Settle down. I guess you found a good title, but what a, and that really gets into the situation, that institutionalization. It's like you're powerless, pretty much.
Well, yeah, when you are under the thumb of an aide or anyone, any staff person, any adult, really, who does not have a child's best intentions or best interests, that is, in mind. And it's dangerous. It's very, children are so fragile, so delicate, and all children.
Yeah. The children in this particular book, Good Kings, Bad Kings, also proved to be very resilient, too.
Yeah, well, people happen to be that way. It's kind of wonderful. I love that about the human race.
Yeah. As you mentioned, you said this has opened a lot of new doors. Is this going to be a movie at some point, or are you busy working on new novels at this particular time, or did you say what you wanted to say with this particular book?
I would love to write another book about something else entirely, but I haven't started it yet. I'm researching. I guess that's starting it in a way.
Yeah.
And about a movie or anything, I doubt it, but who knows? You never know.
Well, one of the things I think could be a good takeaway is, you know, I was really struck by that essay you wrote about how disabled characters are portrayed in movies and television. And it would be nice if this maybe changed a few minds towards looking at the person rather than the disability when they're writing for those situations.
That's certainly true. Or just looking at the person with the disability, and the disability is fine, you know? Why do we attach so much, you know, all of the importance in people to the way they appear? That's one of the things I don't care for in most of us. I guess that's the flip side of resilience.
Well, the name of the book is Good Kings, Bad Kings. Susan Nussbaum, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Writer, playwright, and disability rights activist Susan Nussbaum speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. Her first novel, Good Kings, Bad Kings, was the winner of the Penn Bellwether Prize for Socially Engaged Fiction, and it's published now in softcover from Algonquin Books. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you miss one of our recent programs, they're available online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.